Hello, my name is Fiona Willard, and I'm going to talk to you today about infant feeding decisions and philosophical mistakes about motherhood. So, anecdotal evidence of the intense pressure surrounding infant feeding decisions is easy to acquire. You just have to talk to a new mother. In addition, several sociological studies report an association between decisions to formula feed and feelings of guilt, blame and failure. Indeed, whatever decision women make about feeding decisions, they face what Elizabeth Murphy calls a moral minefield. I want to try to connect this moral pressure regarding infant feeding decisions to a mistaken assumption in discussion of maternal behaviour more generally. I think this mistaken assumption is that a mother who fails to do something to benefit her child is liable for moral criticism unless she can provide sufficient countervailing considerations to justify her decision. So basically, if you could do something that might benefit your child, then if you don't do it, you have to have some really good reason. And people can require you to justify your decision. And if you can't provide a really good reason, then you're liable to moral criticism. You can be subject to guilt and blame and those sorts of negative moral emotions. I think this assumption that a mother who fails to do something to benefit her child is liable for moral criticism unless she can provide sufficient countervailing considerations to justify her decision, I think this assumption contributes to a culture of pervasive guilt and self-sacrifice that undermines women's emotional well-being and discourages pursuit of non-domestic goals. Now, I'm not going to spend a lot of time right now talking about the evidence for the association between formula feeding and feelings of guilt, blame and failure. There's a lot of evidence out there. Very many sociological studies have reported this kind of association. It's something that every new mother that I talk to seems to recognise. So I'm not going to spend a lot of time arguing that this is real, that this is something that's happening. Let's, for the purposes of talk, just take it as read that there are these associations between decisions to formula feed and feelings of guilt, blame and failure. Why is there such an association? I think that it's at least partly to do with this mistaken assumption. As I say, I think that it's mistakenly assumed that a mother who fails to do something to benefit her child is liable to moral criticism unless she can provide sufficient countervailing considerations to justify her decision. So if you fail to take some opportunity to benefit your child, people can ask you to justify your decision. And if you don't have some good enough reason, they get to blame you and you're supposed to feel guilty. I suggest this involves treating the mother as if she has a defeasible duty to perform each action that might benefit her child. What is a defeasible duty? A person who has a defeasible moral duty to perform an action is basically required to perform the action unless she has sufficiently weighty countervailing reasons. So a defeasible moral duty is a duty that can be outweighed. That's why we call it a defeasible duty. But unless it's outweighed, unless there are some sufficiently weighty countervailing considerations, you're required to act in accordance with that defeasible duty. If somebody has a defeasible duty and doesn't perform the action in question, then she is liable to moral censure if she can't provide these sufficiently weighty countervailing reasons. She's also liable to be asked to justify any failure to perform the action. So having a defeasible duty means that your behaviour becomes other people's business. They can ask you to explain why you didn't perform that action in question. And if you don't have a good enough reason for your failure to perform the action, then you're supposed to feel guilty and they can blame you. Defeasible duties have these features because they play an important role in moral practice. We need to be able to hold each other to moral standards. The behaviour of others matters to us, both because of its immediate effects and because of the attitudes it implies. The importance of holding others to moral standards means that we need to be able to blame people when they behave badly and to be able to require assurance from others that they haven't behaved badly when there's reason to think they may have done so. And that's why defeasible duties imply not just liability to be blamed if the behaviour is unjustified, but also liability to be called upon to justify one's behaviour. So these features of defeasible duties are good features. Defeasible duties should have these features. The problem comes when we treat things that aren't defeasible duties as defeasible duties. Now, I think that people mistakenly treat mothers as if they have a defeasible duty to perform any action that might benefit their child. And I think that people come to have this assumption because of some reasoning that is initially plausible but ultimately mistaken. So people say things like, or they think things like, a mother has a defeasible duty to, for example, breastfeed because it will benefit her child. People don't often actually say a mother has a defeasible duty to, for example, breastfeed, because normal people don't talk about defeasible duties. But you will often see people saying things like, well, of course we're going to ask you why you didn't breastfeed, given how good breastfeeding is for the child. And I think that's just saying the same thing in different language. So, why is it plausible to think that a mother has a defeasible duty to breastfeed because it will benefit her child? I think there are two versions of the argument that could lead you to think this makes sense. The first argument is what you might call the argument from moral reason to benefit. So basically here you think, well, look, if an action will benefit your child, then you've got a moral reason to perform that action. And if you have a moral reason to perform that action, then you must have a defeasible duty to perform the action. You must need to provide some justification for failing to perform the action. I think that this version of the argument involves a confusion between moral reasons and defeasible moral duties. It mistakenly assumes that whenever you have a moral reason to do something, this means you have a defeasible moral duty to do it. And I'll argue in a minute that that's a mistake. The second argument that I think could lead you to say a mother has a defeasible duty to, for example, breastfeed because it will benefit her child, is what are called the argument from the duty to benefit one's child. Because it's very hard to deny that mothers do have at least defeasible duties to benefit their children. So you might think, a mother has a defeasible duty to benefit her child. So if breastfeeding will benefit the child, she has a defeasible duty to breastfeed. But I think this involves a confusion between having a duty to benefit someone enough and having a duty to benefit at every opportunity. Just because you have a duty to benefit someone doesn't mean that you have a duty to take every opportunity to benefit them. So again, I think this involves a mistake about what duties to benefit look like. Okay, so let me first explain why I think you can have moral reasons without duties. So why is the assumption that because you have a moral reason to breastfeed, therefore you have a defeasible duty to breastfeed, why is that a mistake? Well, it's because there seem to be many cases where we have a moral reason to do something, even a very strong moral reason to do something, but we don't seem to have a duty to do it. We don't seem to be required to provide sufficient countervailing considerations to excuse failure to act in accordance with that moral reason. So, for example, suppose that I might make lots of money for cancer research by running in a charity race, and that this will benefit those with cancer. It will help contribute to a cure for cancer. That's a pretty strong moral reason. However, it doesn't seem to be that if I decide not to run in that charity race, people can come up to me and say, "Why didn't you run? Please provide some sufficiently weighty countervailing considerations to defend your decision." It might be that, in fact, on balance, I have no sufficiently weighty countervailing considerations. Maybe it would benefit me to run in the charity race or help me get a bit fitter. And I would work more efficiently because I was fitter, so it wouldn't undermine my work or anything like that. But it still doesn't seem as if I need to provide some kind of justification for not running in the charity race, or that I should feel guilty or other people should blame me if I can't provide that kind of justification. Not all moral reasons give rise to defeasible duties. And this seems to, this is very good, because having a duty every time we've had such a reason would, first of all, end up having a very great aggregative cost. So even if it's not costly to run in this charity race, if I have to justify my decision not to run each time I have some opportunity to run in a charity race, that's soon going to end up being very costly. It would also involve constant calculation. What would be the best thing for me to do? Do I have an excuse for not taking this opportunity to do something good? And it would make every area of my life the business of others. It would allow others to stick their noses into all my decisions. I think all of those give us reason to limit defeasible duties without limiting moral reasons, because all of that doesn't mean that there isn't a very good moral reason to run in the charity race. So it seems to me that it's just mistaken to think that whenever you have a moral reason, you have a defeasible duty. And therefore it's a mistake to go from the undeniable claim that the benefits of breastfeeding give us moral reason to breastfeed, to the assumption that the mother therefore has a defeasible duty to breastfeed. What about the second argument, the thought that, well, mothers have the feasible duties to benefit their child. So surely if breastfeeding would benefit their child, they have a duty to breastfeed. A duty to benefit a person doesn't imply a duty to take every opportunity to benefit that person, unless we add that it's what we call a maximal duty to benefit. A duty to take every opportunity to benefit the person. So the real question is the mother's duty to benefit her child a maximal duty, a duty to take every possible opportunity to benefit her child? And I don't think it can be. I think this kind of duty would have unacceptable implications for the mother's self-ownership and well-being. First of all, the duty would be extremely burdensome. First of all, mothers face pervasive opportunities to benefit their children. Every decision a mother makes has the opportunity to, in some way, affect her child's well-being. And there is a huge amount of uncertainty about what benefits and your child and what might in fact harm your child. Everything from whether you can eat peanut butter while pregnant to whether you should use those little plastic covers that you put on plugs around the house to how long a baby can stay in a car seat. All of that, there's a lot of confusing, contradictory information out there. So if we held mothers to such a duty, this would be extremely burdensome. This would basically take up a huge amount of energy just trying to work out what your duties are, and then living up to them would also be extremely burdensome. But I think we need to limit the burdensomeness of duties of parenthood. This is for two reasons. So first of all, society needs people to be mothers. It needs people to have and raise children. Otherwise, society won't continue. And there's something really worrying about society benefiting from people taking on these burdens if the burdens are intolerably high. Secondly, for many people, parenthood is an immensely important part of a good life for them. For them to have a good life, they feel they need to be parents. And there's something very worrying about saying you can only have access to this incredibly important good if you're required to take on intolerable moral burdens. There are also issues of gender imbalance, which I won't go into here. Okay, so this leads us to the philosophical conclusions. Guilt, blame and shame associated with infant feeding decisions may be linked to a mistaken assumption that mothers have a defeasible duty to take each opportunity to benefit their children. This assumption rests on initially plausible but unsound arguments. Now, what are the practical implications of this discussion? Well, I used to think that this was a systematic mistake being made by health professionals and breastfeeding support organisations. So what I thought was going to happen is that I was just going to get in touch with these people and I was going to say, hey, look, you're making this mistake. And they would all say, oh, yes, we see. And then it would all be fine. But I was wrong. Health professionals, many health professionals and parental support organisations, breastfeeding support organisations, they know this. They're not making this mistake. At least those making policy in many of these organisations are really very aware of the need to support all infant feeding decisions. A recent example would be the NCT Infant Feeding Message Framework, which states, parents should be encouraged to make feeding choices that are right for them and their baby. It's important for parents to feel confident and comfortable with their decisions. Therefore, concerns about health issues should be balanced with recognition of the impact of social and emotional issues on baby feeding decisions. So, it's not as simple as I thought. It's not a matter of just saying, hey, health or institutions, breastfeeding support organisations, recognise the mistake you're making. So why do mothers still feel accountable? I have a few suggestions. One is that I do think that some academics and health professionals are making this mistake. They are treating women as if they have a defeasible duty to breastfeed. Many members of the general public are making this mistake. So if you go to social media forums or down to a mother's group, or you will find women who think that if a mother decides not to breastfeed, then she should be expected to justify her decision. I think many mothers are making this mistake. And that includes mothers who are judging others for their behaviour and mothers who are feeling guilty because they haven't breastfed. Elslyn is also going to raise some important issues which might explain why sometimes the things we say might be taken as implying that we think there's a duty to breastfeed when there isn't. So, what are the practical implications? Well, I think we need continued discussion of how to avoid these basic mistakes, thinking that there's a duty to breastfeed, at policy and training level. But we also need to go further. We need an awareness of the ways in which mothers might interpret advice and the need for care in talking about infant feeding decisions. We should in fact aim to give mothers tools to navigate the moral minefield of infant feeding decisions, to be able to make sense of why, for one person, it's worth the effort of breastfeeding, and they should be able to celebrate the fact that they have put those efforts in and succeeded in breastfeeding. But that this doesn't mean that another person who, for whatever reason, decides not to breastfeed should be expected to justify her decision. One thing I'm interested in is whether discussion of the philosophical mistakes, for example, thinking about that reason-duty distinction, could help us here. Thank you.